All the second stage tanks now pressurized. 35 seconds and counting. We are still going.
Welcome to Lickin' on Lindsay.
Are we beginning to see the formation of a fundamental shift in the American dream of home ownership?
A weekly mortgage market update.
20 seconds and counting.
Providing up-to-the-minute information.
Of Chinese investors in the real estate market, and they're really starting to have an impact, but it's only
on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news relating to the mortgage industry.
T-minus 15 seconds. Guidance is internal.
If you look at it on a dollar value, it's significant. If you look at it on a unit basis, it's inconsequential to the overall big market.
To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972.
Here's the deal. How much of the market, real estate market, is comprised of this type of property?
12, 11, 10, 9, ignition sequence start.
And now, here's five, your host of Lickin' on Lending, David Lickin.
Good to have you with us, everybody. Welcome to another podcast with Lickin' and Team. I'm so excited about today's podcast. I have a good friend of mine coming on to talk about the latest PHH ruling, what's going on there. Ari Karen is here in the house, so we're going to be hearing all about that. But welcome to the podcast, everybody. It's Monday, February 12th, 2018. How this year is flying by. I do not know what happened to January. That just was a win. That got lost in the time warp somewhere. Anyway, we appreciate you being a part of the podcast. This podcast, as I say each week, is created by mortgage professionals, and it is for mortgage professionals and an increasing number of real estate professionals. And interesting enough, even a few legislators on the Hill that are tuning in to find out what's going on. They found this to be a very effective way to stay dialed in, tuned in to what's happened in the mortgage industry. You know what? There was a time I was over at Thomson Reuters' office, and someone there, I can't remember the gentleman's name, was saying how he started listening to the podcast, the most recent one, started learning more about the industry. He learned more about the industry by listening to our podcast. He started the most recent and started going backwards in time. He had an hour train ride in and out of New York City. So he listened to it. So we've got some good listeners, and we've got some awesome, awesome advertisers and participants. We want to say a big thank you to Alice, Joe, Andy. Andy's out with us today. And Alan, we're part of making this podcast so possible. Also, Black Knight, we've got them as sponsors. Arch MI, we're very thrilled to have these sponsors. Finastra, the Mortgage Collaborative. Velma, the Virtual Electronic Marketing Assistant. But most of all, we have you as our listeners, and we're honored to have you here. Again, we're committed to bring you timely information on what's going on, and certainly what we're talking about today is timely and important. Thrilled to have you with us, everybody. Honored to have the sponsorships and partnerships with various ones, one of which is with the MBA. So we've got Rob Van Raphorst. So let's play the update from the MBA. Rob, what you got for us, my friend?
Hi, I'm Rob Van Raphorst. Welcome to the Mortgage Minute and the latest news from the Mortgage Bankers Association. Last week, the House of Representatives once again passed MBA-supportive legislation that would favorably adjust the Truth in Lending Act's definition of points and fees under the Ability to Repay QM rule. Also, President Trump signed a two-year budget deal and continuing resolution into law. The package, which includes roughly $500 billion in increased defense and domestic spending, raises the federal debt ceiling, extends federal flood insurance program authorization through March 23rd, and includes tax provisions extending both mortgage insurance premium deductibility and mortgage debt forgiveness through tax year 2017. MBA's weekly mortgage application survey showed mortgage apps increased 0.7% from 1 week earlier, and the average contract interest rate for a 30-year fixed-rate mortgage increased to its highest level since April 2014 at 4.5%. We'll see you at MBA's CREF and Multifamily Housing Convention and Expo 2018 this week in San Diego. That's all for the Mortgage Minute.
Hey, that's right. Lots of conferences. You know, it's interesting. I was just talking to someone, and we have a upcoming MBA secondary conference in New York. And can you believe I'm already setting up appointments in February for a conference that's taking place in May? We are on with Hans Stedman of Republic Bank, and we're setting up appointments. Crazy how quickly these conferences fill up. Make sure you get out to the MBA. They provide so much leadership. By the way, on the topic of leadership, we have launched another podcast. As if one isn't enough, two is better. We're about ready to do a third one with Alan. We'll talk about that a little bit later. But we have launched a month ago the Lickin' on Leadership podcast. We kicked it off a month ago, four podcasts ago, with the interview with David Stevens. Excellent interview. Then we went over to my good friend Jack Guttentag, probably be the oldest person we've interviewed, 93 years old, professor at for years, since 1963, taught economics at Wharton. Has a very unique perspective on the industry. Talk about historical perspective. He really has. He's been a student of our industry. He's also known as the mortgage professor. That was the second podcast. Then we did one that a person that's near and dear to Alice's in my heart, and that is Jan Wetzel. What an amazing podcast that was. And this Saturday, by the way, we do these every Saturday. We release them Saturday morning. We record them. We get them edited up. Kudos to my program director, who is just crushing it on the edits. I love the work he's doing on these. So we record the interview. We toss it over to him, and he puts it out for us. And I think you'll be real pleased with the quality and, most important, what's coming out. I love hosting these, and I'm co-hosting them with Mark Jones of AmeriFirst Mortgage up in your stomping grounds, Alice. Love working with Mark. He's such a perfect balance to my personality, and we're out there with these. So John Robbins was the one that we did on Saturday. I just listened to it again, and I tell you, it's just something you got to listen to, folks. If you're interested in becoming a good leader, or if you are a leader and you're looking how to grow as a leader, check out the podcast. You can check it out on lickingonleadership.com. All right. Well, let's get over to check out what the macro view is of the markets. That's done by Les Parker of Loan Logics. I'm always interested in the music parody that he has and the excellent job that Gary Ketrebone does on the editing of that.
Dave, Loan Logics appreciates the opportunity to present Market Logics Live. Traders never lost 1 minute of sleeping, worrying about the way things might have been. Big deal, keep on turning. Proud Merkel, keep on ruling. Rolling, rolling, rolling to disaster. The new grand coalition in Germany between its two largest political parties means higher spending and uncertainty over Germany's political stability and Europe's future structure. That's good news for the dollar. The bad news for the U.S. credit markets is a budget buster budget deal. Let's hope the rise of the dollar and the bad technical position of some global equity markets sets the stage for a significant drop in long-term Treasury yields. These views are my own. Go to loanlogics.com to subscribe to my daily newsletter. Rolling, 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 rolling
on a river. I used to snow ski in Colorado. David Stevens and I had that in common. I lived in Aspen for a year. Man, I love this. No skiing to that song was so much fun. Joe Farr, it's fun having lunch with you this past week. I love getting to spend some quality time with a good friend, and you are that, bud. It's good to have you here with us today. How are you doing? What's happening in the markets there, Joe?
Oh, we're down just a little bit today. MBS prices were unchanged until the stock market kind of went on a nice little rally. Last time I looked, we were up about 400 points on the day. No economic data to speak of today, and so, stock market rally has kind of put a little downward pressure on MBS prices, upward pressure on mortgage rates. But talking about last week a little bit, Dave, step back and look at the whole week, you'd say, not much happened. You know, MBS prices fell about 3/32 or less than 10 basis points. The 10-year Treasury yield rose a basis point, so the economic data came out, had no real effect on the market, and, you know, very little prize to it. So, it was a quiet week, right? Not quiet.
Yeah.
Right?
quiet in one sense, but man.
Wild week. Whew. With intraday price movement. Volatility was high. Midday price changes were seen just about every day. And one day I noticed both favorable and unfavorable price changes during the day. And it was all driven by the wild swings in the stock market, which we're all familiar with, especially Monday and Tuesday. Besides the stock market swings, other things weighed on MBS prices and mortgage rates. One was, as Rob was talking about in his section, the budget that the Senate passed on Wednesday, which increased spending significantly, and the House passed it, and the President wound up signing it on Friday. Don't know if you recognized it, but we did have another government shutdown during the week, but it was just a 9-hour shutdown. But the budget increase in spending is going to have pressure on MBS prices and mortgage rates because of the additional supply of bonds necessary for the government to issue to fund that deficit. So the passage of that was not good for mortgage rates. And then the other thing that happened during the week that was not good for mortgage rates came out of the ECB and the Bank of England. Both organizations, representatives from those organizations had some hawkish comments about what they felt like future policy needed to be. And so that put downward pressure on MBS prices, upward pressure on mortgage rates. So this week, I hope we don't see the same thing. I mean, we are starting out with some stock market volatility, but not to the degree it was last week. The economic data that's on the schedule this week, it really starts on Wednesday. The big day is going to be Wednesday when both retail sales and CPI are released. And with a lot of the stock market volatility coming from reactions to rising employment costs on Friday, the 5th, you know, inflation coming from CPI may be a big deal, you know, if it's significantly different than what's expected. Core CPI is expected to rise as it did last month at 2/10. So we'll be paying attention to that. And then retail sales is always a big number. Following CPI and retail sales on Wednesday, PPI comes out on, and several manufacturing reports come out on Thursday. Home builder information comes out on Thursday. Housing starts comes out on Friday. So like last week, this week could be another week with reaction, you know, market reaction to swings in the stock market, and it'll be important to really be paying attention.
We will be paying attention. And that's, you know, it was just one of those weeks where, and the secondary conference was going on, the Southern secondary conference going on. What a time to stand at a conference when your phone's going off and you're just having to jump out there and cover the market, play the market. So it'll be interesting to know how the hedges work for a lot of those companies. We're going to see a lot more volatility. I think in this year is going to have, it's not unusual volatility, historically speaking, but Les Parker in that podcast that he did at the first of the year, I think it was the 8th, January 8th. I encourage everyone to go back and listen to that. And he said, we could have as much as 200 basis points volatility this year. And I think we had a good chunk of that this last week. Yeah, well, it's fun seeing you here. I got a chance, listeners, to have lunch with Joe Farr this last week, and what a joy that is. Always fun to get together with you in person. And appreciate you dialing in to be here with us, and also have your commentary all the way through the podcast. Look forward to get your questions that you have for Ari as we get into talking about what does this latest court ruling mean for PHH. Good stuff. All right. Yeah, I forgot to mention, everybody, that I will be speaking tomorrow at the Texas Mortgage Roundup in San Antonio, Texas, at the Marriott Plaza. So I speak at noon. Come on down. It's a one-day event. You got to meet this. Some of the industry leaders and top producers from across the country in our market get to gather. So we'd love to have you there. Without further ado, we're going to go out for a real quick break. We're going to catch up with our friends at Velma. And then also, we're going to talk about TMC. The TMC conference is going on right now. So here we go. Are you using one of those expensive CRMs that your loan officers won't use? If so, then give my friends at Velma a call and let them help you create a customer journey that relies on the data and not on loan officer interaction. I encourage you to consider working with Velma to create a truly automated marketing experience for your organization. Velma makes marketing automation easy. Schedule a demo today at Velma.com, VELMA.com.
That is a very effective tool, folks. Check it out, Velma.com. The Mortgage Collaborative Conference is going on right now, the Winter Conference in San Diego. And again, we interviewed the chairman of the Mortgage Collaborative, John Robbins, on the Lincoln and Leadership Program. He talked about a number of things. We have these questions that Mark and I go down the interview process with, but he talked about the importance of what is important to him, what he sees is the most important things about leadership. And it's really fun to catch up with leaders like John. I've known John for decades, forever. We both had mortgage companies. His was large and publicly traded. Ours was small in the market, more of a small regional company, and he was a big national company. But I got to play golf with him, got to meet him way back then. I admired him then. I even admire him more now. You wonder why some people are successful? Well, folks, go listen to that interview. It'll tell you why. And he's continuing his leadership with David Kittle and so many there at the TMD event, the Mortgage Collaborative. If you're looking for a place to meet industry leaders and leaders in the marketplace, guys like John Robbins, this is a great conference to be at. It's too late to go to this one, but there'll be the summer conference, but you can get involved throughout the year and encourage you to do so. The power of the network, the Mortgage Collaborative. Alice Alvey, let's get over to you. I'm really looking forward to hearing Ari's comments about the PHH ruling and some of the latest stuff, but I know you got some other updates for us, Alice. What you got?
Well, I think as a result of the PHH case, the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau has jumped out there basically with four proposed rules or requests for comment. Let me rephrase. Requests for comment, requests for information. And in these requests, basically it's like, okay, I am questioning everything I do and I want public feedback on what we're doing. So, right, if the PHH case and all the processes they went to try and enforce this got thrown out, and not in specific words, and we'll talk about that with Ari. You know, certain the case itself is specific more towards some of the marketing and rest of Section 8, but a lot of the things that also came to light was just the overall process, right? How many years it took. The thing was in litigation for over 5 years, and the process just became, the whole process became in question. So the proposed rules start with trying, you know, this concept that the Bureau is authorized, they're authorized to commence legal proceedings for any federal consumer law violation, and they can go either through an administrative adjudication process or they go through civil action in federal district court. So one of the proposed rules is, we're just doing what we were told to do under the law. What should be changed just under those two premises, just the fact that this is how they go about enforcing. Then there's another request for information that says, all right, now take a look at our adjudication proceedings. What should we do differently here? And then there's another request for comment on their civil investigative demand process and what should they do differently there. And when you read through the itemization of what they want comments on, those last two items, they want, they have about 11 items, 11 to 12 items that they want to get comment on. You really start to see the detail at which lenders are left out of communication. A lot of things go on behind the scenes before a lender may know exactly the why and the what they're being charged for. For example, I remember with PHH when it first came out, was going, what'd they do? You're looking at stuff from, you know, 10 years ago? How can that be? There's a lot of questions around that. So I do think these are requests for information that lenders must pay attention to. I'm sure the Mortgage Bankers Association and others will be posting their comments. We'll watch this very closely over the next couple of weeks, but I do recommend that, especially the larger lenders, get out there, talk to your legal counsel, get their input on how this process is, could be detrimental in the way that it's written today for lenders. And this is our opportunity to comment, to say this, put our voice in on how we believe this needs to change. So we know ahead of time what it is that, you know, we may be charged with. And then also the overall process, that they shouldn't be regulating through enforcement action and making some comments along that line as well. So these were all just published, so we have 60 days to get our thoughts together and respond on that. So there was that one component I wanted to make sure everyone was aware of. Go to the CFPB website and check out those comments or those requests for comments. The last thing, of course, is Ginnie Mae coming out with the letters that called out, you know, in their press release, they say there are 9 letters. Everybody points to the Bloomberg article that named a handful of those lenders who all, of course, said, we are not churning our VA borrowers. But the fact remains there are a lot of companies that are. They are closing loans at slightly elevated rates for vets, which turns around and makes them easy picking for a quick refinance. So they close that purchase with high amounts of perhaps lender-paid costs for a higher rate and then turn around and refinance them at a lower rate. So that's what's got to change, and people believe there's going to be more coming out of Ginnie Mae. So for all of you on the line, you know, checking your process and procedures and how you handle your leads, definitely something in orders, because Ginnie Mae, people believe, is going to come out with some more regulations around this or more boundaries around the refinance rules. So stay tuned for that.
Good report. Good report. Appreciate it. Appreciate, Alice, you being a part of the podcast. And also, I know Bill Cosgrove, our good friend, president of Union Home Mortgage, is honored and blessed to have you there as the vice president of education and training. Appreciate you giving us a legislative update. Good job. Really appreciate it. Folks, let's run out to listen to our sponsor, Finastra. Get a word from them. and then also Arch MI with Jim Jump.
Hey, thanks a lot, David. Finastra is extremely proud to be a key sponsor of the Licking on Lending program. Known formerly as DNH, Finastra's global lending division provides end-to-end solutions and innovation to the full spectrum of lenders, including independent mortgage bankers, community banks and credit unions, and even the largest banks globally. Learn more about how you provide an innovative digital experience for your borrowers by leveraging our multi-channel point-of-sale solution, which includes the new MortgageBot Mobile, by visiting our website at finastra.com.
So good. Finastra.com. Check it out, folks. Great tools, technology, and a growing company. Man, third largest fintech company in the world. Amazing. Let's go out to Arch MI. I want to get a quick word in from Jim Jump. They do a great job with their RateStar program.
Thanks, David. Let me tell your audience a little bit about Arch MI RateStar. RateStar is the most sophisticated pricing solution for mortgage insurance quotes ever built. RateStar has an advanced revolutionary design. It's simple to use. It's easy to access, and it's fully mobile. You can access it anywhere, anytime. RateStar provides a more sophisticated and dynamic pricing solution, far superior than conventional rate sheets. It's available on loan origination systems, through many pricing engines, and it rewards your origination of high-quality loans, again, with our most competitive rates. Of course, RateStar is backed by ArchMI's people power, providing superior support and service whenever you might need it. For more information about RateStar, please go to archmi.com or archmicu.com for credit unions. Thanks, David.
I tell you, they've got some great technology. But the people part, that's my favorite part of ArchMI. They've got some great people there. If you have not connected with your local representative, get a hold of them. You will not be disappointed in what they can do for you. But they're just good people to get to know. And that, you know, you're known by the company you keep. You will not be going wrong by getting to know the folks at Arch MI. All right, let's get our good friend Alan Pollock on. You know, Alan, we keep telling people, I had several people write me this week, when are you going to launch the tech stack radio? You said you're going to do it in January. Folks, it's coming. It's coming, is it not, Alan? You got a lead on it. We got people wanting it. That's good.
Yeah, I've actually had a few people reach out as well. It's heating up, and we are just about ready. We finalized the logo, some of the production sounds and things that go with the podcast. We even have our first few guests already identified. So
it takes a lot to get one of these things up. There's a lot of work goes into getting one of these podcasts up and running. So I'm excited and honored to do it. What you got for a tech update?
Today's going to be a fun one. We're talking about vendor management and compliant management system, CMS. Big topic. It's something that we've had to deal with for some time. And so it's kind of funny. It's one of those things, David, that everybody loves and hates. I think back in the days when you had your mortgage company, you had to deal with it. Probably wasn't as much of a focus. From the lender side of the business, it's a must-have. It's something that you need in today's risky world. And by the way, from the technology vendor side, you have to have it as well, because lenders work with third parties and technology vendors now work with third parties. You know, the world of APIs and connectivity has opened the door to so much risk. And so looking at the risk of your business as a lender, what's the risk of disruption, right? What is that digital disruption? The protection of your business, your data, and most importantly, your customers. And that's what the CFPB is concerned about. What are you doing to protect your customer and their information? The data breaches that we keep hearing about keep growing more intense, and there's more of them. And now we're finding there's some of these that we weren't even told about, but there were breaches that occurred X amount of time ago.
Yeah.
So from the lender's point of view, it's hard to know what exactly it is that you want. What do you need to cover? What are the newest trends? How do you manage that? On the vendor side, it's like the TV commercial that you keep seeing every time you change the channel, David, right? Over and over again, your customers want to ask you all these long questionnaires. Each one's different. There's 10 tabs on that questionnaire. It's questions that don't even apply to today's world. It's, you know, like on your Windows NT system, how many users have access to log in, right? Windows NT, there shouldn't ever be a computer with that installed on it ever again. And by the way, as a vendor, in order to respond to certain RFPs, in order to have the ability to do that business, you have to provide this vendor due diligence survey. And a lot of those RFPs now include those questions up front. So launching a business, it's more today, David, than just selling a product, right? You need to be able to support your infrastructure and your customer. So you can code a new app, you can build a new business, but you're not going to be able to get it to market. You're going to need that support and infrastructure to do so. One big Excel file is what we talked about. A lot of people have been talking about, hey, should there be one giant repository? Should there be a formalized vendor questionnaire?
I know who's...
Right?
I know who's smiling as we're getting ready to bring him on. It's Ari Karen. We've got to have him tell about some of his technology he's developed. It's pretty cool. It's pretty cool stuff.
Yeah,
we'll have to have him as a guest on the TechStack Radio. Yeah, but he actually does that. He actually
does
that.
I would love to, yeah. And when you look at, you know, the total result in the end, right, it's timely, it's costly, it requires your business to put new practice and procedures in place. You got to support the risk and compliance and the demand from your customers. I looked at a survey that Deloitte did. It was an international survey, but it had 30% of the survey was financial services in the United States, and 49% of those companies were reactive rather than proactive. 49% were not adequately staffed, and 72% said they don't have the right tools in place. And so when you think of that and all the risk that's out there, it's crazy. So what are some of the things that occur, right? On-site security reviews. Those are when the lender or a third-party auditor comes to your site and they want to see the practices that you stated you put in place. They want to see your data center. They want to talk to the executives that manage the technology group and a lot of those different things. And by the way, what do they ask? How many outages do you have? How do you report those outages, right?
Yeah.
On the technology side, more deeply, they want to know, how do you make software development changes with notification, without? Can you roll back those changes? Are they all-inclusive or slow rollout changes? Right, a big concern that lenders have in today's world, the vendors love it, but the lenders don't like it, is the all-in-one database, right? It's having everyone's data together in one multi-tenant database compared to independent databases. So I know I've talked to some vendors, and I've even done some consulting projects with people that have different philosophies about that. Or, hey, Mr. Lender, you can pay for it to be this way, which mitigates all the risk. And some people do pay for that. But that's a very, very important topics and areas. And there's a lot of areas inside of the whole topic. And so, you know, one thing I did a lot of research trying to figure out, does all of my past experience, David, sort of parlay into what the industry is saying? You know, the CFPB has a guideline. They have what they call, it is the 5 steps of compliance management review and examination procedures. And it's a process that they want you to go through to rate each of those third party companies that you work with. And it's not just technology vendors, by the way, it's mortgage advertisers, as we know and have been talking about, the mortgage servicing side of the fence, and and how you onboard a client and transfer data, and the experience of the consumer and their information is another extremely big topic. So anyways, I was looking through, you know, sort of some of this different information, trying to say, hey, where does my experience connect with, you know, what I've been talking to other people about? And it really is very much in line. I think that there are some very important steps that you have to follow. And I think what we should do is bring together on TechStack Radio a vendor, right, that manages this risk, somebody who's just starting to implement it. We'll bring a lender in. And then what we'll also do is we'll bring in, there's a couple different companies that actually have some very interesting solutions, and we should ask Ari what he has as well.
He's itching to get onto it right away. I can tell right now.
Right. So I'll leave us with the teaser into TechStack Radio, but I think it's definitely super important that we help folks learn more about the process. And Ari, if you want to touch on that a little bit today, that'll be great
as
well. I'll ask you some questions when we get towards the end.
And very good. Alan, thanks so much.
Yep. For anyone that's interested in becoming a part of TechStack Radio, you can contact us, Alan, A-L-L-E-N, at tms-advisors.com.
Yep. Appreciate it so much, Alan. Folks, let's run over. We got Ari's itching to get on and respond to all that. I can feel it. He's in San Diego. I'm over here in Austin. I can feel it all the way here. Anyway, let's go over to John Maynell, who is VP of Client Services for Motivity Solutions, and now a Black Knight company. And let's get the latest KPI of the week that John has for us. John?
Hello, Dave. Thanks very much. Great to be here as always. And this week we have another key performance indicator related to TRID. And the KPI is underwriting to closing days. And like all TRID metrics, the focus is the estimated closing date and how far in advance a file should be submitted to underwriting to make provisions for any and all underwriting eventualities, possibly multiple resubmissions, and leaving enough time after final approval to finish the loan and deliver the closing disclosure on time. A very common practice for lenders that have automated their analytics with mortgage business intelligence like Movation is to have the system automatically send email alerts to participants on those loans that are running late and at risk of missing these milestone deadlines. Now, this allows loan participants to continually reprioritize their workflow to ensure they remain compliant, clearly demonstrating again that what gets measured gets results. And with that, Dave, I
love that.
Once again, and turn it back to you.
No kidding. I love that. I love that. What gets measured gets results. I repeat that with clients constantly. Thrilled to have John with us and thrilled to have Black Knight and the whole family of companies here with us. Let's run over to Black Knight and listen to a quick word about them. They've got some hurricane relief information that's out there, that how they pull the database here. Stay tuned. Just let them tell you about it. We'll be right back after this break with Ari Karen.
Did you know that the impact from Hurricane Harvey, Irma, and Maria has caused historic damage to thousands of homeowners in the impacted areas? The results reported by Black Knight's data and analytics team state that there were 4.38 million mortgage properties within the Harvey and Irma FEMA-declared disaster areas. An estimate of just over 400,000 mortgage properties in Puerto Rico as a whole and the entire territory has been declared. Altogether, these properties represent approximately $755 billion in unpaid principal balances. Identifying properties damaged by these devastating storms is cumbersome and time-consuming for servicers. So in order to help, Black Knight has introduced disaster tracking capabilities within its LoanSphere MSP servicing system. The new functionality actually sweeps servicing portfolios to quickly identify properties in FEMA-declared disaster areas. If you want to learn more, call 844-474-2537 and you can ask Black Knight or email askblacknight@bkfs.com.
That's so true. Check it out. Very cool services over there. I'm really excited what Tom Sanzone and the team at Black Knight is doing. Well, without further ado, let's turn on the microphone and get Ari Karen in on this dialogue. Ari, it's so good to have you with us. Thank you for joining.
Thank you for having me, David. And I have to say, you were right, because I was going crazy not talking during any of that. So.
I knew that. I knew you wanted to get in on that one really badly. Strategic Compliance Partners is a wonderful, it's a wonderful company. I recommend it to many. And of course, you're part of the Offutt Kerman law firm. But Strategic Compliance Partners, seeing as we are on that topic, let's go ahead and tell them what you do. I love it.
Well, essentially what we do is we do compliance management. Differ that from consulting because we oversee the entire compliance process, compliance management system process. And we do that through really experts in the area, both with legal expertise and compliance experience, as well as supporting technologies, like many of the things Alan was talking about. So things like Share Diligence, which is a vendor automated vendor management platform that actually addresses some of the concerns that Alan was talking about. And also something new called Astro, which is essentially a virtual compliance system.
Love Astro.
Utilizing technology to make the compliance officer's job a lot simpler. We really come in with holistic packages everywhere from existing staff to actually creating and implementing and putting somebody in place to actually manage compliance for a company kind of under the umbrella of our expertise of technologies. So that's sort of a quick overall assessment of what we did.
Well, like Alan said, we'll definitely have you on Tech Stack Radio and interview you on that, go into that much more in depth. But listeners, this is pretty cool stuff. I've seen this stuff. I work with Ari. Ari's a client, a friend, and I tell you, it is amazing. And check out Strategic Compliance Partners. Want a good attorney? Go ahead and get a hold of Ari with the law firm off at Kerman, obviously. But also, if you're looking for some great technology in this area, check out Strategic Compliance Partners. Get a hold of Leslie Benjamin. I was just texting her. She's there with you in San Diego. And I know you're about ready to go up on the platform and speak. And we're a little behind schedule, so I want to get right into this important topic so we can wrap this up just a little bit early. So you can get you downstairs so you're on time as you enter the platform. By the way, when you get up there, would you tell everybody there, Lincoln would like to be here. He has to speak. I'm speaking tomorrow in San Antonio. But tell the whole group that we miss them and tell them to come listen to the podcast so they hear your comments. Let's talk a little bit about the PHH case. If you could kind of give us an update on what's happened recently for those that may have missed the really important news. Give us an update.
Sure. So essentially what happened was just a little background we've had. The three panel decision some time ago, and that was going to be reviewed in bank by the entire panel of the DC circuit. And they did that and they issued their opinion. And they really came out with two kind of issues that came out of this was the constitutionality of the CFPB one and what does it mean for RESPA. And what's been reported, I think, is interesting because this is one of those areas where, you know, the highlights or the cliff notes don't really tell the whole story, in that when you talk about the ruling on constitutionality. Is it okay, David, if I kind of roll with this, or I don't know?
Yes, please roll. We'll jump in.
Okay, so with respect to the constitutionality, while it's been reported that, hey, the CFPB, its structure is lawful, the president only can remove somebody for cause. When you actually read what happened and what the court did, that's kind of misleading because, yes, true, the CFPB is considered constitutional, and you can only remove the director for cause, but as president could. But what they then went around and said was, yeah, but cause isn't that big. And there were four really different opinions written for the majority. And one of them said, well, you know, for cause really just means you have to give a notice and a reason. And another one said, well, it's a little bit more than that, but it's not very much, and the president has really broad discretion. Another one basically said, you know, no one's, this is kind of a mute point because no one's going to be really, I didn't say these words, but no one's really going to challenge a sitting president because we're never going to rule against a sitting president. So, I mean, when you kind of look at this, you know, what does for cause mean? And what they're basically saying, it doesn't mean a whole lot. So let's take this around full circle. When you really read the opinion in detail, what you come to the realization is that if the bottom line that we were talking about at first was that you would have a CFPB director for pretty much determined 5-year period because of the way it was set up. Well, not really, right? In other words, you're going to have a CFPB director as long as the president wants that CFPB director. And as soon as that president doesn't want a CFPB, that CFPB director, the roadmap has been laid in gold for them to replace them. And so if you think about at the end of the day what happened, right? We started at the panel that said it's unconstitutional because it's too hard to remove the director, right? And you have to have that removal power. And we came around and said, no, it's not unconstitutional, but that's because the removal power is pretty much there 100% anyhow. So we end up basically back at the same place through all of that, which, you know, and the reason why that has significance to lenders is if you're counting on these policies being in place for periods of years, which you have to assess that, you know, in terms of decisions you make now, because there are statutes of limitations and people can go backwards in time. If you have that, you've got to realize that should the political winds change, the CFPB will change right with them. It's not going to stay the same, right? So I think that's kind of the important aspect to that piece of the case. Now, when it comes to RESPA, they really didn't talk about it. I mean, over the majority opinion was something like 80 pages, and I think they spent 2 paragraphs on RESPA. And what they did is interesting. Now, again, it's been reported that THH won, and they did, right? But if you want to try to extrapolate that ruling out to what does that mean for me in my business with MSAs and co-marketing and things like that, I don't think it's so easily done because what they said, I mean, they said a couple of things. First, they said, well, let's set the stage of this. The context is that in this area of mortgage insurance, it's not something borrowers, you know, shop for. And the reinsurance of that, which is what this really dealt with, isn't even something the borrower can choose. And it doesn't, as long as it's not really affecting, and the other thing is that it was an area where they said pretty much every reinsurer is captive anyhow. So in this context, they kind of already narrowed the case so significantly. But then they take the next step and say, so what we're holding here is that, or we're reinstating the opinion to the extent that it holds that a, you know, reinsurance arrangement that doesn't increase the price to the consumers doesn't violate RESPA. And so when you really go back and say, hey, what can I cite this case as precedent for if I have some other situation more relevant probably to a lot of your audience, will I be able to cite to that and say, hey, what I'm doing is okay? And I think the answer is probably no, because when they narrowed it so significantly, right, to say what we're doing is reinstating the holding that, and then they explain how it pertains to reinsurance. When they do that, they limit the holding to the point that its wide potential impact is very, very minimal, if that makes any sense.
Yes, it does. Alice, let's get you in here because I know this is near and dear to your heart. You've been studying and reading it, and I'm sure you're itching to get a few questions in.
Well, great. Thanks, Ari. I love the clarification that you just made because I think
that was good.
Yeah, it felt like that, you know, the original case that a lot of legal counsel looked at that it was pending, and while it was unsettled, that's when a lot of the, you know, the pulling back of the marketing agreements started to happen. If just with the premise that the CFPB could reach this far, they could go this far back, they could do something this crazy that someone had already been told was, you know, acceptable if they did X, Y, and Z. So does that in and of itself at least stop some of the fear that was out there of the unknown, even though they didn't affirm anything new, did it at least accomplish that?
You know, there's so many things that create the fear of the unknown that I don't think is touched on by the case, and that we've all talked about a little here and there. But I don't know in terms of whether it really changes things too much, because I think they sort of dodged the biggest, they sort of dodged the big issue, right? They didn't really talk about what does it mean to violate RESPA by narrowing the holding so significantly to a fact pattern and talking about reinsurance. And you can't really draw much from it. I mean, they did say one thing, which I think is positive. They said just because they rejected corduroy to the extent he said, just because there's a business benefit associated with a marketing, you know, some type of marketing activity, and it does not otherwise increase the cost of the consumer, just because there's a business benefit does not in and of itself violate RESPA. But that still leaves like a huge wide berth to say about things that could violate RESPA, right? So when you go back and you're trying to say, can I do an MSA or not? I mean, look, as an aside, you know, it's probably pretty well documented that I think you can do MSAs if you set them up right. I thought that before. I still think that. But I don't think it really adds too much to the equation, because they so limited this opinion, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, that's,
well, yeah,
that does. I have the question about
affirmative.
Yeah, exactly right, Alex. And with having four opinions, what's different about this case and this ruling is we have four judges. There wasn't like one opinion put out like by the Supreme Court. You have the dissenting, you have the where it went, and then you have the dissenting kind of opinion or however that works. I can't remember. I'm not saying that right about the Supreme Court. This was different. This is, you have four different rulings or four different opinions on the case. Comment about that. Doesn't that just bring, doesn't that muddy the waters more than bring clarity in a sense?
In a sense, I think what's interesting is that there was a dissent. I believe three judges dissented. And then there were three or four majority opinions written. In other words, opinions that all went, and they all agreed that on the final result, but their rationale for how they got there differed. And that's when I was talking
And
what's interesting is that opinions really differed on what cause meant. I would think if you looked at the pages or lines, probably 70% of this whole opinion was about what does cause mean. So it's kind of interesting. They dealt with the constitutional question, but in a large part, they really focused on the issue of what does cause mean, and they just whittled it down to not a whole lot anymore, at least in the context of a, you know, sitting president and applying the rules for the statute for Dodd-Frank.
Yeah, that gives me some clarity. Alice, sorry for jumping in there. I wanted to get that one issue that resolved in my mind, and I just got a couple of text messages in from listeners as well. So go ahead, Alice, if you have some more, if you want to follow on your original thoughts.
Oh, no problem. Yeah, so, you know, I think clarity, though, I mean, we did at least get clarity that they can't go back that far. And so there is a win for the industry, right? I mean, I don't want to minimize that part of it, right?
You know, yes, I think so, Matt, but like, the reason I said is I just had a case last week. We just won a motion to dismiss on a case that involved equitable tolling. But, you know, now plaintiff's lawyers, and I'm sure the government at some point will start bringing up this concept of equitable tolling, because if they can essentially establish, in our case, we were successful for some other reasons, but, I mean, if you could establish there was some agreement that people didn't know about, and as a result of not knowing about it, they didn't act on their rights, the statute of limitations can be put back for many years. And so I don't want to be like negative Nancy and just talk about the negative, but I also want to be accurate in the response, saying, yes, I think that's true. I mean, the idea that the CFPB could go back to the beginning of time, yes, I agree. That's a win, and it is definitely a win. I'm a little cautious in that, because if the type of thing that went on was some type of, let's take a fact pattern with a marketing agreement, and nobody really knew about how exactly that was working because it wasn't disclosed to a consumer. And the result was that they found out later that, you know, some argument they paid more, or they were steered, or whatever it might be. I still think with equitable tolling in the arsenal, they would be able to go back, maybe certainly not forever, right? But they could go back certainly beyond the statute of limitations, considerably beyond that.
We're getting some text questions in from our listeners. We're going to let a few more roll in. Joe, do you want to jump in here with some questions?
Just curious, Ari, about that $103 million add-on to the fine that was initially levied by Cordray. I know it was at one point the courts reversed that, but Was there any discussion about the ultimate fine associated with the PHH case?
Well, because they found that PHH didn't violate, you know, that it was not a violation of RESPA, the fine sort of, you know, goes away. So, I mean, for PHH, it's a total win.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I thought. That was a total win there. Sorry about that. I already jumped in there. There's a little bit of delay. The joys of the delays of this audio podcast. You're still there. I want to make sure we haven't lost you. I'm looking at all these text messages, and I'm also looking at the clock. So we keep you getting you downstairs on time. One question came in. So it does. I saw this one come in before the podcast. When you talk to Ari, ask him, is the witch dead? Is the CFPB witch dead? I can't say the rest of the part of what they wrote here, but the answer, how would you answer that to say it is the CFPB witch dead? The answer is no, but how would you respond to what's a realistic way to look at this?
Sure. I think that, I mean, let's remember something. You know, the reason why there's no return to the quote unquote good old days is the law has changed, right? So the laws that are now in place that weren't in place pre-crisis now are there, and that's not changed. If anything, let's just assume the CFPB has gone into, let's just assume they've gone into hibernation. I think that's a bit of an exaggeration, but let's just assume they have. Yeah, you still have the states to enforce it, and they are. You still have, Fannie, Freddie, and FHA and HUD, who I've seen get much more active in the last 6 months, from a lot of different clients' perspectives. Alice, I don't know, if you've seen some of that as well. But, last thing, I'd love to hear if you've seen it.
Well, I think that the question is that, I can't remember the date off the top of my head. Was it October of 2016 or something when the CFPB came out with their letter on marketing agreements? So does that still stand?
I think it does, because I think you have to be, I think some of the fear, honestly, was a little unfounded. Paranoia to a point of just not fear. But that doesn't mean like today, I'd say rip up the piece of paper, go back to what you were doing, don't worry about it, party time. I don't think that's true either.
Yep.
So I actually think the best policy really is to try to look at what the CFPB did, have marketing agreements if you're going to have them that focus really on consumer direct type of relationships, a lot less of the, hey, we're going to meet for Friday happy hours every Friday and you're going to pay for them. That stuff I think is going to be problematic, or certainly could be. But I think if you establish this much more marketing that faces the consumer, you know, the difference is instead of going in and having a presentation to the realtors about your whatever it is that you're going to have, do a presentation to realtors and their clients about first-time homeowner, what you have to have ready before you go for a mortgage. You know, all this kind of stuff, it's that little tweak. It reminds me of one of my favorite lines from one of my favorite movies, Spinal Tap. Probably shouldn't admit that publicly, but it is. And he says, it's such a fine line between stupid and clever. And I think there's a lot of truth to that in this particular scenario.
There is.
Little tweaks can make big, big differences in the outcome.
Okay, I'm looking at questions. I want to keep you on. Honor my commitment to you to get you downstairs for your speech here in a few minutes. One of the questions coming in on LO Comp, any changes as a result of this?
No, not from this opinion. No, I don't think this really pertains to LO Comp, this opinion.
Okay, what about FHA, Fannie, Freddie? We're starting to see, and you alluded to this, that we're seeing them take a stronger position or role in governance over the industry. Do you see any shifting going on there? If I'm understanding the question, while you're answering that, I'll see if there's a part B to that. Go ahead.
Yes, I am. I mean, I think I don't know exactly what the rationales are or what's really happening behind the scenes. I'm going to give you some speculation here. It almost seems to me as if these agencies, the group said, listen, while the CFPB is taking care of it, they got it covered, right? We don't have to worry about sort of the quality loans because there's so much regulation going on. And now it's almost as if, because the CFPB is certainly taking a step back, that they're going forward, and they're focusing not necessarily on the same things the CFPB did, but certainly on the quality of the process. And I'm seeing a lot of things, even with clients that don't have, any problems in neighborhood watch numbers, no problems in default rates, and they're really getting examined hard on a lot of different things. So I think there's something going on there with that, and I've seen it multiple times, not just with one client. So something's happening there.
Yeah, there is something happening there. I like what one person said. He says the wolf pack may have backed away, speaking the analogous of wolf being the CFPB, but the coyotes are still out there, and they can eat you alive. They may be smaller bites. So it's interesting, the perspective out there. You brought us a lot of perspective. You're going downstairs to speak at the Mortgage Collaborative. Tell us a little bit about what you're talking about there at the Collaborative. So to give us a tease, so those that are not attending or are part of the Mortgage Collaborative, they might want to consider become a part of it so they can hear leaders like yourself speak there.
Well, two things I'm going to talk about. One are about HMDA, sort of some of the changes that have gone on because of the CFPB and the impacts on fair lending and things that you have to kind of examine for that. The other thing I'll be talking about is loan officer compensation and certainly some of these gray areas. I think now that some of the fear may have gone away in the area of compliance, that people are reevaluating what the decisions they made. So we'll talk about, are there things that they could change and still remain compliant, and what are the risks?
Well, I just get some more text messages in. Want to hear Ari's thoughts on vendor management, how his system works. A lot. So that kind of stirred up some interest. So, Alan, good job of bringing it up. And we're going to have you as a guest on Tech Stack Radio when we launch that, which is coming up here real soon. So we'll get you on. But I want to say thank you so much for taking time just before you go up on the platform. Be here with us today to give us some updates and perspective on the latest ruling. Appreciate it, man. Very much.
No, thank you. Thank you very much for having me.
Always a pleasure, Ari, and we'll look forward to having you back soon after you open up some of these comments. There's a lot of text. Please have Ari come back. I've got 4, 5, 5, 6 now come in saying, please have Ari come back. We want to hear some more about this. We got more questions. So have a good speech. Thank you. Tell the audience, everyone. Wish I could be there and say hi to Leslie for me. Great group of people. Wish I could be there with you in San Diego.
Sounds good. I will. Thank you, and thanks for having me. Bye, guys.
You bet. Alice, Joe, of course, Alan, jump in here. Let's wrap this up real quickly with kind of your perspective on what you're hearing, and start off with you, Alice, and then Joe, and then Alan. Alice?
Yeah, well, I think great. I think it was definitely helpful insight, that we didn't get anything new, but it stopped us from losing anything that we thought we had.
Right.
That's the right way to kind of sum it up. So it's critical, right? Because that was a huge win. Hugely important in the way that the case was sought after. And I think that's why I think taking a look at these pending proposed rules is so critical, because it gives us a chance to comment on how this overall process unfolded. We just learned a lot from it, and let's see if we can improve the process to give ourselves a better shot and keep winning should they come back after us and any other cases going forward.
Yeah, great point. I think one of the things for me was, and I had the privilege of listening to Ari on this topic last week. He spoke at the Austin Mortgage Bankers Luncheon, and I had the privilege of spending the whole previous day with him, or a good chunk of it, and we talked a lot about this. What's really interesting is seeing what some of Fannie, Freddie, and HUD playing a bigger role. Now, we don't know if they're playing a bigger role. It's maybe just because we're a little less concerned about the CFPB, but it's real interesting. We're going to be tracking all of this and having more guests on this topic. Joe? Let's run over to you and then Alan.
I was interested in what Alice brought up earlier on, and a lot of the issues with the CFPB was just not knowing and not getting answers. And all those requests for comments should result in answers. Alice, is that something you are looking forward to?
Well, I hope so. A lot, we can comment all we want, but whether or not anything passes and changes will depend on how loud that voice is. And even then, we'll have to keep pressing for it. So I think that's what's key. And then hopefully the answer is yes, we can facilitate some change.
Yes. Alan, your thoughts as we wrap up this podcast today?
Yeah, absolutely. It's kind of interesting, everything that has transpired. And, marketing goes into technology as well. I've been part of a couple of different platforms over the time that have included, ways that you try and stay RESPA compliant, right? And did they do it or did they do it right? I have no idea. Something I'd like to learn more about, and I think it'd be interesting to hear from Ari on that. But it does sort of fold into the technology aspect, how you're delivering the content. It could be a site that offers rates and product eligibility or soft eligibility, or it could be the capturing of a lead and distribution to other people. So there's a couple ends to it. So it'll be interesting to hear what he has to say.
Yeah, it's going to be real interesting. Folks, we're so grateful that you tuned in to be here with us this week, and we've got more podcast guests coming up. If you're interested in hearing from a particular guest, we get so many requests, and we have so many guests coming on as a result of what you are wanting to hear on the podcast. We appreciate that. We've got a lot more requests coming in about a host of things. Probably the one that's the most interesting that's coming up the most is what's going on in the consumer direct world. Lots of attention in that space. So we're going to be bringing that one back up. How can you get originate loans? What are the latest trends there? I'm again speaking in San Antonio on that topic tomorrow. And I think it's 1 o'clock or so. Also 17 more times across the nation with these conferences. Go to mortgageconferences.com. You'll see where they're all listed and where I will be speaking. But we're going to be focusing on that on the radio program. There is definitely a shift taking place in the market. We're seeing a shift to Consumer Direct, and without question, learn more about it, and we will be covering a lot of it on the podcast. Alice, Joe, Alan, thank you all for joining us today. Look forward to be back here next week with another Lickin' and Lending podcast and an update on all that's going on in the industry. Folks, have a great week, and talk with you soon. Thank you.
You've been listening to Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lickin of Transformational Mortgage Solutions. Join us next week, and thanks for listening.